The E-Commerce Fuel Podcast is brought to you by Fulfill.io. I found in my studies of hundreds of e-commerce stores that operational efficiency is far more important than almost anything else in terms of determining your success. And that's why you should take a look at Fulfill. It's the only cloud ERP designed to help you efficiently and, most importantly, profitably scale your eight and nine figure brand. It does that through helping you identify operational bottlenecks that you can solve, providing better forecasting and supply chain planning and PO management, and also leveraging their powerful warehouse management system, which results in fewer mispicks for better customer experience. They're the highest rated ERP in our community, not NetSuite, not Scubana or Odoo, but Fulfill. So start focusing on growing profitably and check them out at ecommercefuel.com/Fulfill. The E-Commerce Fuel Podcast is brought to you by OneClick Upsell, the largest and most popular upsell app in the Shopify marketplace, trusted by over 11,000 users, over 1,900 Shopify Plus stores. Man, it is hard to get people to your store these days, whether you're doing organic or whether you're trying to get down in the muck that is Facebook ads these days with the disaster that that has become. You want to take advantage when people actually show up. And if you give people a chance, one in six will spend more money with you if you send them a personalized, targeted, relevant upsell offer, which is what one-click upsell makes it super easy to do. You can do it pre-purchase, post-purchase, give them lots of different options. It makes it incredibly easy, and they've helped store owners generate over $200 million in additional revenue. So if you want a slice of that, and you want to get started, you can get started really quickly with them in just a few minutes, get your first upsell up and running, check them out at ecommercefuel.com/upsell. Hey, it's Andrew here, and welcome to the E-Commerce Fuel Podcast, the show dedicated to helping seven and eight-figure e-commerce brand owners build incredible businesses and amazing lives. And it is summer. We're right in the heart of it, at least if you're listening in the U.S. Late July, early August, starting to get a lot of those out-of-office email replies after sending those emails to folks. And I hope you're doing the same. Hope you're getting a chance to take some time off, recharge, spend some time with family and friends. Been doing that the last couple of weeks, had some really good trips, took my 10-year-old daughter on a bikepacking trip for the first time, which she'd been wanting to do for years, which was a ton of fun. Some bike trips with my dad, some camping trips with friends and family, getting out on rivers up in Montana. It's been really, really good to recharge and kind of, yeah, get outside a little bit. So hopefully you're doing the same and getting some downtime. Also realizing, while I've been doing a lot, I also realize I'm pretty bad at taking time off, to be honest. You know, I think, guessing people can relate to this, but we do like a 3 to 4 week sabbatical once a year for all of our full-time US team members. And yeah, I'm finding that I have a really hard time not sneaking in and checking the email or replying to things I see pop up. And it is a challenge to fully disconnect. I need to get a lot better at that. It's also a good thing. It means you enjoy what you're doing and you enjoy your business, which is a good part. So I have been, man, I've been a little bit quiet on the ECF forums the last 2-3 months. Been doing a lot of planning for the next, the next phase of E-Commerce Fuel. It's kind of crazy to think ECF, the podcast, is 10 years old, was 10 years old this month. And the community is about right around the same age, which is insane, that decade mark. Wild to think about. And I've been spending a lot of time just thinking strategically, talking with the team about what is that next phase, or at least, you know, I think longevity is one of the most underrated aspects of entrepreneurship, especially if you can stay with the same business. It's hugely valuable. And so I want to make sure, how can I do this in a way, ideally, that is something that you can keep going for years and years to come? And so I've been thinking through a lot about that. Excited to share more about that in the future, maybe how things, some different things we have in the plans for the future. And excited to come out of this, you know, kind of had a summer really hitting the ground running, already feeling excited to get back to it. Anyway, it's going to be a lot of fun. If you are in the community, speaking of the community, we have an event coming up in Austin. We're calling it our Austin ECF Fuel Up. So we have ECF Live like in March, but we haven't had at least this year, a big, you know, event to get people together. So this is kind of the halfway through the year mark for our community members. It's going to be an Austin single day event, chance to get together with great experienced store owners, to connect with them, meet in person, have some great meals, talk about stuff, connect, learn. And it's fairly intimate. We're going to be under 100 people. Already have a bunch of people signed up, a lot of people from out of town. The Austin community is phenomenal. Shout out to all of you. in Austin. Very cool city. So that's September 28th of this year. So if you want to come learn the details, head over to the community and hit on the events tab. You can learn about the event and also sign up. It is just for community members. So if you are interested in joining, we'd love to have you. You can learn how to become a member at ecommercefuel.com. And this is a complimentary event that we're covering. So first come, first serve for it. Can't wait to get together with everyone in September. So today on the show is just a solo episode, if you haven't figured that out already. And I want to talk about when to take money and invest it in your business and when to pull it out of your business. And specifically, I'm going to try to make the case to convince you that you should probably be pulling a little bit more money out of your business than you are. And for a handful of reasons. And this has been something I've been thinking a lot about. I've been executing kind of investment strategy for it, particularly the last month or two on some funds that have accumulated. And so it was top of mind. Also saw an episode on the e-commerce playbook podcast from Taylor Holiday that was on this as well, right? So I was kind of thinking about it. So I'll link up over to that. I didn't listen to that intentionally because I wanted to try to not accidentally or inadvertently co-opt those ideas. But I think he and Mike Beckham have a great conversation over there about that, which I'm guessing has a lot of similarities. But I think this is important. I think it's not going to apply to everyone. I think if you're growing like gangbusters, and as e-commerce companies do, swallow up unholy amounts of cash as they're growing quickly, then this is not a great strategy for you. I think you should be putting, if you have a high degree of confidence, if you are cash strapped, trying to get every dollar you can, and you have a high degree of confidence that you can take $10,000, $100,000, place a PO and turn that into $200,000 or $300,000 fairly easily, I think that's a much better move than what we're going to talk about. Or if you're in your early stages, if you're in the first year, 18 months, 2 years of your business, and you just are really doing everything you can to try to get momentum built, I also think this probably doesn't apply to you. I think you should be focusing all of your resources on building momentum in that business. But if you're, you know, 3.5, 4, 5 years old, maybe your growth has stalled a little bit, or you're not stalled, but maybe it's slowed down a little bit. You're becoming a little bit more of a mature company. And you're also thinking like, hey, I'm not trying to shoot for the moon here. I'm not trying to have a $1 billion exit. There's a few people out there that want to do that. But a lot of us want to build just a healthy, stable business that helps us, you know, is interesting professionally and also rewarding financially for ourselves and our family. If that's the case, I think you should really consider consistently pulling money out of your business and maybe a little bit more than you think. I, as a big caveat, I have almost certainly underinvested in my business from a cash perspective over the last 10 to 15 years, taken out probably much more, you know, more in dividends than I think maybe your average person would recommend. But at that same point, I've kind of recently got to a point where if everything blew up, which is the worst case scenario, and it's something we all think about as entrepreneurs, if everything blew up and went to zero, we probably have to make some lifestyle cuts, maybe have to reconsider a few things, change some things, but my family would be okay. We'd be okay. It would be a huge disappointment, but it wouldn't be an existential event for our family. And that's just such a big difference, I think, in entrepreneurship, as we'll talk about here. And underinvesting in the business, you could make the case that overinvesting could have got us there more quickly. I'm not sure, but you know, 10 years in at that point, and also continuing to still have a business that primary business that didn't require an exit to get there, and still have this amazing vehicle to make connections and help people and do fun things professionally. So here's the three reasons why I think you should consider having a meaningful strategy to take distributions from your business to build a little side pot as you go, if you're kind of in that maturing phase of the business. The first one. Things blow up. Like I don't need to tell you this, because if you're anything like me, this is your worst case scenario and something you always worry about. I tend to be a worst case scenario guy, plan for the worst case. And I always think I can always see how or at least worry about how things are just going to go to zero. And sometimes they do. We probably overstress this and over worry about this, but it's a reality of the world that we live in as entrepreneurs. So, you know, I know friends that have had their businesses, seven-figure businesses, sometimes seven-figure in profit businesses, go to zero overnight due to regulatory issues or changes or bans. I remember back in my early part of my career, I had a business and I woke up one day and it was an organic-based business. So due to an algorithm change, I lost 80 to 90% of my traffic overnight. Woke up one morning, I was like, oh man, this is really sad. Orders are a little soft. Well, it's too bad. They'll pick up tomorrow. And next day they didn't pick up. And after the third day, I was like, oh, this is not good. log into analytics and you just look at the, you look at the free fall. You know, I think about, you know, people who've been banned from Amazon. There's a, one of the most impressive entrepreneurs I know who's done a lot of great things over the last 2 or 3 years. Had a really strong growth trajectory. And over this last year, it's just really plateaued and they've had to focus much more on profitability and cutting expenses. And he's an incredibly smart, ambitious entrepreneur. And so this happens, right? Things blow up. You have such a high degree of concentration of wealth in your business. And there's so much variability and risk factors that come into this as well. I think it's worth it, obviously, but that's the nature of it. And so putting money aside, building that, taking some of those chips off the table, so to speak, I think makes a lot of sense because you don't know what's going to happen. So number one, things blow up. You don't know in this space. Number two, I think you're more innovative the less money you have. I mean, we all know companies that have massive funding rounds and they just have all this money in the bank. And whenever you have a problem and you have lots of money, you're going to just take that money and throw money at the problem. But money oftentimes is not, it definitely can be a tool, but it oftentimes can, you know, not be the best tool for solving a problem. Or the more money you have access to, the less scrappy and innovative and creative you're going to think about solving those problems. So money can help, but it is not necessarily a panacea for solving your problems more effectively. The more money you have, the less you have to prioritize. The less you have to really think about what's important, what do we want to focus on, what's going to drive those 80-20 outcomes. And I think it's easier to get less disciplined the more money you have. So all that being said, if you can take some of those profits, some of those cash flows off the table, put them aside, invest them in something other than your business, and it has those added benefits as well of making you a little bit leaner, a little more careful, a little scrappier, more disciplined, better at prioritization, I think that's a win-win. You can definitely suffer from the downside as well. And not having enough money can cause massive problems for your business. So you got to be careful here. There's definitely some benefits about trying to do more with less. The third reason I think you should do this and start building a pot on the side is, and speaking about this pot, I got a little sidebar here. This doesn't necessarily mean that it has to be something where you have to set up like total financial independence for your family. It doesn't mean you have to have, you know, millions and millions of dollars on the side. Even having something like, you know, a basic emergency fund, if you don't have that, but this is a little bit more, this is kind of arguing for a little bit more of an emergency fund. Let's say a 6 to 12 months or 12 to 18 months of runway or living expenses. It just gives you so much peace of mind, one, for your family, and two, for the ability that if everything blows up, you have the ability to go out and take another shot at building a business. Because for me, at least, I got into this game because I've always been a highly suspect and questioning of authority. I like running my own shots, calling my own shots. And to lose out on the business, and if it went to zero and not having another shot at building something that would let me kind of run and call the shots in my own life, that'd be really hard. And if you can have something that gives you almost like just a recovery fund that will let you climb back into the arena once again, take another shot at it if things go down, even that, I think, provides a lot of peace of mind. Anyway, a little bit of a sidebar. So coming back to it, the third reason I think you should think about doing this is it helps you think about your business differently. You know, I think when you're in a must-perform scenario, you think about your business and the decisions and your risk, the risk tolerances you're willing to take and the creative projects you're willing to launch or not launch, or the hard lines in the sand you're willing to draw based on your own convictions. Though you think about those differently if you have to make the business work for yourself or for your family versus if it's just a nice bonus on top, or if you don't have some kind of buffer that can help you ride out a storm if things get rocky. You know, it's a, we should do this or we have to do this versus I think this would be awesome. I think this could be really interesting, even if it takes a while. I think this really aligns with who we are as a brand and as people versus this is what we have to do to try to not rock the boat or make waves. And I think that you're going to build a better business in general when you are taking those risks, when you're sticking your convictions. But it's harder to do sometimes when there's more volatility and more uncertainty with there. Anyway, so I think you can build a business that is a better reflection of who you are, what you value, and probably that's more unique and differentiated if you have that little side pot of whatever degree that looks at. So those are the three things. Build kind of an insurance fund. Take money out of your business regularly. Think about that because things blow up, because you're more innovative and scrappier and probably a better operator with slightly less funds. And also because it helps you think about your business differently, specifically in being more creative, being bolder, being able to do things that you probably also enjoy more as an entrepreneur. So that's my case. A couple little thoughts on, okay, so you're taking this money out. How should you think about doing that? How should you invest it? And I have to do my super boring Ben Stein disclaimer here. Investment disclaimer. I am not a registered investment advisor. Don't listen to any, all this stuff is stuff that I am doing and the way I think about it. And that's the way I'm going to talk about it, how I think about this. It's kind of informational and educational purposes only. If you're actually putting real money to work here in the markets, in investments, go talk to someone way smarter than me about this who actually has the qualifications. That being said, I think there's a temptation once you start getting some money from your business, or just in general, especially in the entrepreneurial space, to become a quote unquote investor, right? Like it sounds awesome. You sound like a baller, right? Like, hey, I'm a father, I'm a dad, I'm an investor. It sounds very sophisticated, like you've arrived. I can tell you from dipping my toes into those waters over the last handful of years, it is a lot harder than you think. And when I talk about investor, I'm not talking about public markets investing. I'm talking about angel investing, private markets investing, talking about, you know, startup investing, things like that. And I think you can definitely make money there, especially if you have an edge. But I think it's trickier than a lot of people expect. I think most of the investments that people make don't pan out. And if you get to a point where you are financially independent from your investments in other places, you're good to go and you want to start doing that, awesome. I think that's great. Or if you want to be highly selective about that, like you know, maybe you look at stuff, but you just, you know, you only take deals that you have a strong degree of conviction based on your experience, knowing the team, knowing the industry that you think are going to pan out well, and it's a smaller percentage of your net worth. Okay, that I can get on board with that too. But I think you should really try to build up this fund that we're talking about until you get to a point where that's substantial, where you're financially independent based on those resources. I'd be careful about investing in those kind of private VC angel investment style things. That's my opinion. For this fund that we're talking about, this kind of insurance fund, this diversification fund outside of your business, personally, I want something that's totally passive. I don't have to deal with reasonable return profile. So I want to take a little risk, but I don't want to take, you know, I don't want to bet the house on black. I want it to be passive. I want it to have a good track record. And this can be super boring. You probably know what's coming here, but I think an index fund in equities is a pretty good place for me that I've decided to put those money. So the way I do that, my favorite indexes are the Total Stock Market Fund for the US. Vanguard has a great one. It's a VTSAX. That's their mutual fund side versus their ETF side. Unbelievably low expense ratio. I think it's like 0.04%, which is just unheard of. And this is a fund of exposure pretty much to almost the entire stock market. So you can think about it, if you want to get really geeky on the finance front, you've got like the S&P 500, which is the 500 biggest companies. You've got like the Russell 2000, which is like the 200 smaller growth-oriented companies. And those two do they're pretty close. Either one of those probably wouldn't be a bad bet, but they do different, you know, their track records are different based on different periods of economic growth or uncertainty. I just like the Total US Stock Market Fund. It gives you everything. So I like that one, putting about 80%. I'm putting about 80% of my ballpark liquid investments in there. And then very similarly, just a Total International Market Fund, sans the US, so no US. Vanguard has a good one here, VTIAX. And that is just exposure to emerging markets, developed markets, all across the globe, apart from the US. And I put about 20% of that fund in terms of the liquid investment side into there. So that to me is the more I have thought about investing and the more I've invested over the years, the more I feel like the keeping it simple is the way to go. That is the bedrock, and it's super boring, but that's the bedrock of kind of how I'm investing those funds going forward. The other two parts about that to think through. One, if you have a handful of companies that you have, again, kind of going in the similar mindset of the private side of the markets, or the VC investing or angel investing, I should say, rather, is probably better term for it. If you have a handful of companies you have a high degree of conviction around where you have an unfair advantage and you want to allocate, I don't know, and I want to allocate 5-10% of my portfolio to those, I think those can be an interesting way to maybe squeeze out a little bit of extra return, assuming you're very disciplined with it. And so when I think about that, I think about companies that are in the e-commerce space or the technology space that I know based on the fact that I'm in this day in and day out, that I talk to entrepreneurs in this space day in and day out, that if a hedge fund manager from Wall Street called me up and wanted to ask, you know, talk to me for half an hour, I could give them information they don't know, then okay, maybe that's where I'll make some bets. So for example, like Shopify, I bought Shopify when it was falling off a cliff, you know, 12, 18 months ago, because I knew they were a great company and had a near monopoly in the space. Cloudflare is another company I have bought and has done well, but only because I've used and know the space for both of those really well. So companies like that, I think with a small allocation, you can put in there. And then it was funny, I was having a good conversation with my brother yesterday about investing, and the topic turned to bonds. And I always feel like bonds are so boring. You know, my time horizon is 20, 30, 40 years for these funds. And bonds traditionally underperform. They're less volatile, which means they're going to go up and down less, but their long-term returns tend to be much lower. A lot of times people will recommend putting them into a portfolio to smooth out returns because they're less volatile. But for me, I've always thought, hey, if I'm in this for 20, 30 years, why not just go all stocks? That's how I've approached it. My brother made some good points in that, hey, you know, you don't, with stocks, you could have a long period of time, like bonds are paying, you know, T-bills are paying what, like 5.5% right now, 5%+ for short-term T-bills, which is pretty dang good. If you look at, you know, some of the stock market from like 2000 to 2010 or 11, stock market didn't do a lot there. I mean, there was like a decade where you really didn't make that much. And you might have, I'm not guessing here, you might have outperformed, you might have overperformed. At least bonds of today would have likely outperformed the stock market back then. I'm just a guess there. But so you don't know what's going to happen. The other point he made was it'll even out your portfolio so that if you do have massive drops, if you lose 60% of your portfolio, people really do. We like to think that we're not going to, you know, sell things when things drop off a cliff, that we're going to have an iron stomach. But man, you don't really know until you get into some of those, you know, 2008 style, COVID style scenarios where the market falls off a cliff. So it reduces volatility. And then also his point is like, if you have bonds that don't go down as much when everything else does, and you could maybe rebalance into stocks, having money that is less volatile when times are hard is more valuable because everything's on sale. So anyway, that's just a little treatise from my brother Chris on bonds. I'm thinking about getting into them. I still like the stock market approach a little bit more. But that being said, you might want to consider them if you're less risky than I am. Anyway, that's the little tiny, quick, you know, Bogglehead Vanguard. And Vanguard, I think, is a great place to buy these because they're rock solid, incredibly low fees. If you can look past their horrific UX interface, which looks like it was made in 1990, it's gotten a little bit better. It's a good place to invest. So that's how I think about investing. And, you know, of course, this kind of goes probably without saying, but the best way to keep them is in tax advantage accounts, if you can get there. You know, a SEP, IRA, a simple IRA, a 401k, a Roth. I'm not going to get into all the variations there because the different vehicles are very dependent on your situation, your income, how many employees you have. It's probably a conversation for another time. But tax advantage, of course, is best because they're going to compound without paying taxes over time. That being said, don't be afraid of putting them in taxable accounts because the compounding, if you do it correctly, can be higher than you think. If you have an index fund, let's say the Vanguard Total Stock Market Fund, you buy it, you're going to pay taxes on the dividends that you get from it. And let's say you have a 10% total return per year. You probably get 2% of your return from dividends and maybe 8% from appreciation. So you're going to pay tax every year on that 2%. But the bulk of it, the capital that you're, the principal, the actual stock that you are holding in that mutual fund, as long as you don't sell it, you're not paying tax on that. So if you held it for 30 years, let's say you own a stock in a Roth IRA, and you hold it for 30 years, let's call it a technology stock, it doesn't pay a single dividend. You hold that stock in a Roth IRA, or just a regular IRA, and you hold it in a taxable account, and you buy it and you don't sell it for 30 years, and it just stays the same. Your taxable implications are almost identical, if not identical. So really, it's just as long as you buy and hold for the long term, you're not paying capital gains taxes on it. So tax advantage is always the best case. But if you're buying stuff, holding it, especially index funds for a while, that's something that to keep in mind. I also, from an advisor perspective, personally, it depends. I think educating yourself on your finances, on investments at a high level is kind of table stakes if you're an entrepreneur starting to build any level of wealth. So I don't have one. There's services like Wealthfront that can help you diversify and balance and rebalance and kind of help you guide things. They charge, I think 25 basis points or a quarter of a percent. Personally, I just like the educate yourself, learn about this. Nobody's going to care about your financial position as much as you do. Personally, I like doing this myself after educating myself about it. And the big plus there too is you save on the fees. Different situations here, but if you're not going to deeply educate yourself on these things, I would recommend talking to somebody about it. Last thing here, I want to start wrapping this up pretty quickly, but how do you think about this fund versus an emergency fund? So I think I need a good name for this. I'll probably come up with one for the title, but this insurance fund that we're having, this is separate from like an individual emergency fund that you should hold for your personal self and for your business, which I think should be in cash or like a money market account. So for our family, we keep 6 months of personal expenses in just a money market account that we can tap at any time. And we keep about 3 months of expenses additionally in the business, so the business could run for 3 months. And that's a little on the low side. My business is a single owner business. And so from an equity infusion standpoint, if I needed to bring in extra money outside into the business, it'd be really straightforward for me to do that because it's only one owner. So I kind of look at a little bit of overlap between the personal emergency fund and the business emergency fund, because I think the chances of having both of those emergencies at once is lower. And then worst case scenario, you can sell some of those stocks if you need to, especially if they're not in a tax advantaged account because you don't have the penalties. But all of this, I think, is in addition to all of that. And I think putting this on autopilot is one of the best things you can do. I think having a methodology where once a quarter, you look at how much extra, how much money you've built up in excess. Or maybe once a quarter, you sit down and you say, hey, where are opportunities in the business? Where can we really deploy cash well and effectively? We're going to see a high return. Where do we want to invest in the business? What's our emergency fund? Do we have that in place? Okay, what's the excess funds that we have that we don't think we can put to productive use? Okay, well, once a quarter, let's go ahead and make sure and put these into whatever investment strategy we've identified. Having a plan for being able to do that, I think, is really helpful. If you're ever in a position where you are saying, I'm not sure what we should do with these funds for our business, I guess we'll have to come up with some way to invest them. If you're not coming up with, in 5 to 10 minutes, some great ideas, I think that's a great candidate or a great opportunity to say, hey, let's take some of this money, let's take the chips off the table and start building this, this little side insurance pot here that will give us all the benefits we talked about. So anyway, that's the case. I think building that, and this isn't an emergency fund, this is like an existential crisis fund. This is a long-term financial independence fund that helps you build and operate your business in really a much, a way that is just more innovative, helps you think about it creatively, lets you take bigger risks. And probably ultimately, having that pot there is going to help you build a better, more viable, more interesting, less stress-filled business over time. So hope that's interesting. I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. I'm sure there's a lot of controversial opinions. I'd love to hear what you think. So drop me an email, andrew@ecommercefuel.com. You can hit me up on Twitter @Udarian, if you can spell that, which I'm guessing 99% of people can't, @YOUDERIAN. Yeah, if you are listening and you're in the entrepreneurial space, check out our community. It's an amazing place. We have over 1,000 e-commerce entrepreneurs that are doing 7 or 8 figures in business. And we have a lot of conversations, not just related to business, but related to things like this, like investing. What are you doing with your money? How much is, what's your investment strategy? These kind of things, these kind of discussions that are kind of related to entrepreneurship, but aren't necessarily, hey, how do you optimize Facebook ads? There's a lot of stuff out there about that. Some of those kind of ancillary discussions related to entrepreneurship for people that are in the trenches and starting to build up a track record, those are some of my favorite discussions in the community. So if you're a business owner doing 7 or 8 figures, check us out at ecommercefuel.com to learn more and potentially apply. So thank you so much for listening. Hope the rest of the summer goes well for you. We will talk to you soon. Good luck building up that fund. Given you've made it to the end of the episode, there's a pretty good chance you're fairly serious about this e-commerce stuff, which is why you should check out the E-Commerce Fuel community. It's a vetted, vibrant community for 7 and 8 figure brand owners. And joining gives you access to a lively discussion forum for experienced founders sharing insights and getting help, access to our library of over 20,000 member reviews on everything from agencies to tech to lawyers to all the things that founders are making hiring decisions or purchasing decisions on to run their business, and invites to member events throughout the year. So if that sounds interesting, you can apply for membership and learn more at ecommercefuel.com. Big thanks to one-click upsell from Zipify Apps. Rapidly increase your AOV by offering targeted high-converting upsells. You can get started with them at ecommercefuel.com/upsell. And also to Fulfill.io, an ERP designed specifically to streamline complex e-commerce businesses and the highest rated ERP among our community members. Learn more at ecommercefuel.com/fulfill. Thanks so much for listening. Work hard, adventure often, and I'm looking forward to seeing you again next Friday.
This is the ASY Radio Network live from New York.